Acts chapter 5, verse 17. But the high priest rose up along with all his associates, that is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were filled with jealousy. They laid their hands on the apostles and put them in a public jail. But during the night, an angel of the Lord opened the gates of the prison, and taking them out, he said, "Go stand and speak to the people in the temple the whole message of this life." Upon hearing this, they entered into the temple about daybreak and began to teach. Now when the high priest and his associates came, they called the council together, even all the senate of the sons of Israel, and sent orders to the prison house for them to be brought. But the officers who came did not find them in the prison, and they returned and reported back. But the officers who came, verse 23, saying, "We found the prison house locked quite securely, and the guards standing at the doors, but when we had opened up, we found no one inside." Now when the captain of the temple guard and the chief priests heard these words, they were greatly perplexed about them as to what would come of this. But someone came and reported to them, "The men whom you put in prison are standing in the temple and teaching the people." Then the captain went along with the officers and proceeded to bring them back without violence, for they were afraid of the people that they might be stoned. When they had brought them, they stood them before the council. The high priest questioned them, saying, "We gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name, and yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us." Well, we'll stop there tonight. We don't, the narrative goes on a bit, but we'll conclude that later. But verses 17 through 28. I've entitled the message tonight, Persecution, Take Two. And indeed it is. Here we have our second persecution here. And the events of chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira, they not only caught the attention of the people generally. Remember, even unsaved people, this was of concern to them. They kind of stayed away. They held Christians at arm's length. But this was a concern to the religious leadership too. They saw the progress from the reaction of the healing of the lame man from birth until this point as a major threat to their leadership. So all the way back to the healing of the lame man through Ananias and Sapphira, all of this was a threat to their leadership because it was convincing people that Jesus is the Christ, that Jesus is the Son of God. So things were getting out of control, and the followers of Christ, in their opinion, they had to be stopped because this had become very personal to them. The judgment that came upon Ananias and Sapphira was a catalyst for church growth that really made the leadership sit up and take notice. Remember the reactions to this event that we saw last week. Remember, number one, we said it served to purify the church and to bring a godly sense of fear to it. Number two, it brought a fear to the lost as well. Number three, it marked off the church as a new entity separate from Israel. Next, in verses 12 and 15 and 16, we see that the power of God was manifested among the people as a result. There were miracles being done. And obviously, that's going to get the attention of people. Next, the church continued to experience unity. That was an issue. You know, if you have a church that is not unified, Satan's kind of accomplished what he wanted to do with that church. A church needs to be unified to fulfill the Great Commission. A church needs to be unified to serve the Lord. And if it's not unified, there's an issue. So the fact of their unity, in a sense, was also a problem to these leaders. False professions, we also said, were held to a minimum because of the fear of judgment. And last, multitudes of unsaved were coming to Christ, and in spite of some of the unsaved who stayed away from them out of fear. So things are not working well for the religious leadership. They are intimidated. They are jealous. We'll see in just a minute. It was not a good situation for them. We see, first of all, the reason for the persecution is seen in verses 17 and 18. But the high priest rose up along with all his associates, that is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were what? Filled with jealousy. The high priest, recall at that time, this is Caiaphas. He was in office until AD 36. He was the official high priest, I should say. Annas was well respected, but Caiaphas was the government appointed one until AD 36. And then along with all his associates, and then the text adds, that is the sect of the Sadducees. This is not a surprising statement. Recall that the religious leadership at this time was mostly made up of Sadducees. Recall, too, a few things about the sect. Number one, they accepted only the Pentateuch as the Word of God. That's it. Number two, they denied the resurrection, the immortality of the soul, eternal rewards, or the world to come. And basically, they didn't believe in the supernatural. So you can see what goes on in this chapter is something that shook them up. The fact, too, that some men just kind of vanished out of the prison, at least, obviously, we know they didn't vanish. The angel let them out. But the fact that they somehow got out without anybody knowing it was definitely supernatural. But, of course, they wouldn't want to admit that. They didn't believe in the existence of angels is another thing. They were extremely loyal to the Roman government. The Christians' actions would bring down the wrath of Rome, they thought. This is stupid. We can't allow this to happen. They were also extremely strict on law and order issues. And then lastly, they rejected the idea of a coming Messiah. So the fact that they're preaching Jesus as the Christ was something that was offensive to them. So there's nothing about these Christians that the Sadducees really liked. Notice it says they were filled with jealousy. The word jealousy refers to intense negative feelings over another's achievements or success. We could also translate it envy. They were envious. They were jealous of them. Kind of strange. We might expect maybe other terms that were used here for what was going on, how they felt, but the Bible uses the term jealousy, or intensely negative feelings over another's success. The Christians were being successful in grabbing the attention of the people of Jerusalem and around. They felt that should have been, attention should be directed toward us. After all, I'm the high priest. After all, I'm part of the religious leadership. After all, I'm a priest. After all, fill in the blank. They should be looking at us. Why would they be looking at these untrained men? Who do they think they are? And this Jesus business, Messiah. And so they were offended, but not only offended, they were jealous. Because they were having success, or the apostles were having success, and they were not. Yes, their doctrine was being contradicted. Their orders were being disobeyed. Chapter 4, verse 18. Speak no more in this man's name. And Rome might be set against the Jews as a result of what these guys were doing. And I'm sure that all upset them. But the truth is that this was more personal than that. We could say a lot of things that were happening at this point. They were rejecting what they said. They were doing this, they were doing that. But it's interesting that it says they were jealous. They were envious. This was personal. They were jealous or envious because the apostles, they had such popularity. They had such respect. They had such influence, the kind of influence that they wished they had and didn't. The power and authority of the religious elite was being threatened. They had to act. They felt they had no choice. They had to do something. They laid hands on the apostles, verse 18, and put them in a public jail. As the first time, it was probably late in the day, too late to have a meeting of the Sanhedrin. So they threw them in jail, and they would try them in the morning. Now, unlike the first time, all 12 were jailed, and it says they were put in a public jail. Someone suggested the jail was perhaps the Jewish state prison in Herod's former palace. That may be. In the Roman legal system, people could be detained before a trial or sentencing, and imprisonment itself was not considered a form of punishment. Isn't that interesting? So they could be thrown in prison. It wasn't considered punishment for them, and they were awaiting their trial the next day. So they were put into a public prison, a little bit different than it was last time for some reason. I don't know why they chose this particular one as opposed to the one from before, but they did. And then we notice verses 19 and 20, release from prison. Notice verse 19, but during the night an angel of the Lord opened the gates of the prison, and taking them out, he said, go stand and speak to the people in the temple, the whole message of this life. During the night, an angel of the Lord opened the gates of the prison and taking or leading them, literally, leading them out. So, you know, waking them up, leading them out. I like what the Net Bible notes say about leading them out. It says, the action by God served to vindicate the apostles. It showed that whatever court the Jewish leaders represented, they did not represent God. Well, that's absolutely true, because God was in the action here of letting them out. They wanted them in prison, but here the angel led them out. So rather obvious here, they're not doing the will of God. They may have convinced themselves that they were, but they were not. Verse 20, go stand and speak to the people in the temple, the whole message of this life. There are two commandments here. Go and speak in Greek. They were to do exactly what the authorities told them not to do. It's the same reason that they're in prison, in fact. They're to go and do the same reason why they were in prison. And what did they do? Did they balk at that? Did they say, look, you don't understand. We're just going to be thrown back in jail again, and they're going to persecute us anyhow. No, what did they do? They unquestioningly obeyed the angel. How would you have reacted after being thrown into prison? Same way? I don't know that I would have. Would you have balked at the fact that the angel said, go and do the same thing, the same thing you were thrown in prison for? I want you to go back and do it again. Probably going to get worse. But they just picked up and they did it. There was no questioning. They knew what they needed to do. They knew what the right thing was to do. So here they go, right back to it again. After these officials told them, you are to speak no more in this man's name. And of course, remember what Peter said, we're going to continue to do it. You know, we ought to obey God rather than men. God told us to do this, we're going to do it. And once again, he tells them to do it again. And notice he says the whole message of this life. Go and speak the whole message of this life. This is an unusual expression. As far as I know, I don't think it's used anywhere else in Scripture. They were to constantly do it. But notice that the message is also to be comprehensive. So they were to constantly do it. But also, the message was comprehensive. Notice what it says, the whole message of this life. There seems to be some emphasis here. They should not be tempted to play anything down. Maybe some people would go ahead and do it, but, you know, maybe we won't emphasize the resurrection as much. You know, maybe we'll just talk about Jesus. He was a good man, And you know, maybe we won't accuse the people so much of having crucified Jesus. Maybe we'll play some of this down, and maybe it'll play better with the leadership. But I want you to notice that they faithfully gave all of it out. And the angel said the whole message of this life. Not just part of it, not just the convenient part of it, not just the popular part of it, but I want you to give it all out. This should be true of us when we give out the message of the gospel. You know, there's some things that aren't always popular. It's not always popular to say to people, you know, you're a sinner. You know, what you're doing is sinful. You're living a sinful life. That's not popular. That's not popular in society. In fact, it's not popular among many churches today, giving out, talking about sin. I remember some years ago, in fact, it was back in 1990, church I pastored in Omaha, Nebraska, I had one man come up to me, and there were some conflicts in the church about the preaching, me. And he said, you know, the last pastor really didn't say much about sin. Didn't say much about, I think he mentioned homosexuality. Didn't say that that was a sin. Mentioned a couple things and said he didn't really emphasize that very much. And I don't know what he did or didn't do, okay? I have no idea. Wasn't under his ministry. I can't really comment on that. But if that is true, and I have to say it's true in many churches today, how tragic that is. A fundamental church, fundamental Baptist church, playing down sin. Not willing to stand up. May we not be that kind of a person when it comes to witnessing. We need to stand up and call sin a sin. How do they know they need salvation if we don't? And notice the whole message of this life. True life through Jesus Christ. Question, why did God want them to do this? Well, think through it. Wasn't this just a waste of time? They were once again arrested a few hours later. So why do this? But notice verses 26 and following indicates that things had changed. Notice go to verse 26. Then the captain went along with the officers and proceeded to bring them back without violence, for they were afraid of the people that they might be stoned. What had changed here? There was an interesting change in the crowd. They handled them very carefully. Why did God do this? I think this is one of the reasons. They handled them very carefully, and then the speech of Gamaliel caused them to be released. The outcome may have been vastly different if God had not sent the angel to release the 12. Folks, many times we question what God does. We say, Lord, why did you do that? Lord, that seemed crazy. I remember some years ago, I was preparing to take a pastorate in Virginia. And it looked like God was leading that direction. My daughter was young at the time, my wife and I felt this is where God wants us. And the chairman of the pulpit committee, the head deacon, called me after the vote on a Sunday evening, and he said, I don't understand it, but he said, you didn't get the vote. And I remember being very puzzled. You know, why, Lord, would you do that? It looked like God was leading us in that direction, and yet he didn't. He totally pulled the rug out from underneath us. Now, we don't always know why God does what he does. I had a dear friend of mine, mentor of mine, Dr. Clay Nuttall. He said God was trying to protect you from something. I don't know what it was. I don't know what the Lord was doing, but that's okay. God had other plans for us. He had another ministry for us. And it's so easy, you know, to try to say, to ask the question, Lord, why? Why did you do this? And ask in such a way that it's faithless. And we shouldn't be that way. God has his reasons for doing what he does. Even though we don't understand, it's okay. Just follow him. These guys could have said, Lord, what a waste of time. You know, you let us out, could have said to the angel, you let us out of here, they're going to have us back in here in a few hours. Why would you do this? But again, unquestioning obedience, that's all he asks from us too. And then we see number 3, verses 21 through 28, the reaction of the Sanhedrin. Verse 21, and what a reaction it is. Upon hearing this, they entered into the temple about daybreak and began to teach. There they go. Now when the high priest and his associates came, they called the council together, even all the senate of the sons of Israel, and sent orders to the prison house for them to be brought. But the officers who came did not find them in the prison, and they returned and reported back. I like what Toussaint says in verses 21 through 25. He says, the facts recorded in these verses are filled with irony. Number one, the guards were carefully keeping empty jail cells secured. Verses 21b through 23. Number two, the highest powers of Israel were gathered to judge prisoners they did not have. Number three, while the frenzied leaders were deliberating as to what had happened to the men who had been in their custody, they were told the apostles were preaching in the courts of the temple. Full of irony, indeed it is. We kind of chuckle when we read these verses because we see the authority of man versus the power of God. And there's no competition. God's in control. And these men were preaching in the temple as they were instructed by the angel. And yet they were the religious leadership, these powerful, austere men, they were flabbergasted. What was going on? Notice the terms that are used here. Now, when the high priest and his associates came, they called the council together, even all the Senate. Council, Senate, same thing. What are we referring to here? The Sanhedrin, okay? Translation's good. Council, even the Senate. It's just renaming it, okay? You can call it the council, you can call it the Senate. It's referring to what we call the Sanhedrin. And then in verse 23, we found the prison house locked quite securely and the guards standing at the doors. But when we'd opened it up, we found no one inside. An unusual report, to say the least. They should have recognized that this was a miracle. But of course, they were Sadducees. They wouldn't do that. They wouldn't admit that. They should have recognized, though, that it was a miracle, and they should have attributed it to God, but they did not. They were Sadducees, and they didn't believe in the supernatural. We will see that they were more afraid of man than they were of God. How pitiful. The main leaders would also be just as afraid of men instead of God. Afraid of being stoned. We'll see that as we go on. We already did. We already read it in the text. Verse 24. Now when the captain of the temple guard and the chief priests heard these words, they were greatly perplexed about them as to what would come of this. How are we going to explain locked and empty cells? You know, what is that going to sound like? What will become of us for losing our 12 prisoners? You know, are they going to punish us? What's going to happen? But someone came and reported to them, the men whom you put in the prison are standing in the temple teaching the people. Humor. And I chuckle as I read through this because these men just thought they were something. And yet God throws them into confusion, throws them into panic. He's throwing into confusion these austere men. and a random individual reports that they are standing in the temple preaching. So here they are. They're upset. They're talking about it. Someone walks by, comes by and says, oh, by the way, those men you're talking about, they're in the temple preaching. So interesting here, verse 26. Then the captain went along with the officers and proceeded to bring them back without violence, for they were afraid of the people that they might be stoned. The captain went along with the officers. They wanted a show of force. They wanted to show these men, we're in control, even though it was God. But we're in control. They wanted a show of force. So the captain of the temple guard went along with them. And notice it says they proceeded to bring them back without violence. Probably wanted violence. Wanted to slug them around a little bit. Wanted to show some force. But they couldn't. Why? They were scared. They were scared of the people. They were scared if they did something against the Christians that people would begin picking up stones and stoning the religious leadership. That's how unsettled they were. Picture that. These men who had all the, before this time, had all the respect in the world, suddenly they're afraid of being stoned. You don't stone someone you like. There's a problem here. As we said before, they were more afraid of men than what God was doing. They should have been more afraid of God saying, you know, if this is happening, something is going on. We need to give heed to it. But they were more afraid of what the men would do to them. They would stone them. Again, we see how positive at this time Christianity was among everyday people at this point. Verse 27. When they had brought them, they stood them before the council, the Sanhedrin. The high priest questioned them. Verse 28, saying, we gave you strict orders not to continue teaching. And notice how he refers to Jesus again in this name. Almost just a derogatory as it was earlier in this book. Teaching in this name. And yet, you have filled Jerusalem with this, with your teaching, and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. Now we see what the concern is. So what they were doing, bringing them back here, they were afraid of the people, they might get stoned. It was a show of force. They were more afraid of men than they were what God was doing. Then we get down to verse 28. And as they saw it, according to the high priest here, there were two problems there. Number one, you disobeyed our order to stop preaching Jesus. That should have been no surprise. Peter and John had told them that they would continue chapter 4, verse 18, and chapter 4, verse 20. Told them that's what they were going to do. And then number two, they said, you want to accuse us of killing Jesus. A strange concern, is it not? You say, well, what do you mean by that, Pastor? Keep your finger here. Turn to Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27. And we see how interesting it is when people change their tune. Matthew chapter 27, verse 20. But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas and to put Jesus to death. Notice, chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds. Put him to death. Verse 25. And all the people said, his blood be on us and our, what, children. His blood be on us and our children. So, why were they concerned? They were the ones who tried to stir up the crowds, and did. They were the ones who got the people going to say, his blood be upon us and our children. Strange concern after what they'd said before, but their tune had changed because now they were scared. You have filled Jerusalem with your teaching. Imagine that. We see how effective the apostolic preaching was here. Tremendously effective. In fact, in some ways, I don't know that we really comprehend how effective it was. But this coming out of the mouths of the high priest, the mouth of the high priest here, you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching. He looked around him and he saw an awful lot of people who now were converted to this, what they considered some Jewish sect, this Christianity stuff. But notice how effective the preaching of God's word was. Jerusalem was now well evangelized, and the Sanhedrin here is panicking. They don't know what to do. They want to rough them up a little bit, but it kind of scares them to do it because we'll get stoned if we do that, because the people like these people. They're supporting them. They're behind them. Next time, I want to look at verses 29 through 42. We see the response of the disciples, the reasoning of the Sanhedrin, and the rejoicing of disciples in verses 41 and 42. Well, as we close this passage, let's keep in mind the kind of testimony that these apostles had. They were willing to obey no matter what the cost. That should be us as well. We should be willing to obey no matter what the cost is. We should be willing to sell out to Jesus Christ and do just what he wants us to do. Very few these days that want to do that. In fact, I remember when I was a teenager, one of the things that was preached to me as a young teen over and over and over again was, you need to sell out to Jesus Christ. We don't hear much of that anymore, do we? Used to hear it a lot. I used to hear that a lot. You need to sell out to Jesus Christ. Folks, we need to sell out to Jesus Christ. We need to do whatever he wants us to do. We live in a scary world. Was then too. And can bad things happen to Christians? Of course, and they will. But we still need to stand up and do what's right. You say, Pastor, our rights are being taken away in these days of ours. I would agree with that. Even religious rights are being taken away today. I understand that. Let me say, it's not going to get any better. We need to stand up and do what's right, regardless of what everyone else is doing. Regardless if whether we're popular or not, it really doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is, are we obeying God, period? And are we going to walk with him? Be faithful. Be faithful. Walk with him.